If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings and the divine love of the one life that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is the sacred arc that unites all hearts. The sacred arc that unites all hearts. So if you're ready, take a deep breath. And align yourself with your spiritual upline, with the masters, angels, teachers, guides, and benefactors that have sponsored your essence into incarnation at this time. And stand with you and work together with you as you labor on behalf of humanity and the transformation of this planet into a higher dimensional octave of consciousness and manifestation. You are all souls with a purpose much higher than just eking out your daily living and attending to your own personal life and affairs. I think you know that. That's why you listen each week. So tonight we're going to speak of a very sacred principle. And I would like you, first of all, to get a sense of yourself as an infinite, divine, co-creative spirit. Stand, if you will, in your imagination, before infinite creation, before infinity itself. Take a deep breath and ask for that which is your portion to understand tonight, and perhaps expand even more in your awareness of yourself, beyond just this tadpole in the physical world right now. There is a part of you that is already omnipresent, immortal, and totally one with God. Your luminosity illumines every star. You are the light within every eye, within every atom of existence. You are the very photons. You are the very radiance. You are the Atma, the one indwelling spirit that has become all of this and remains absolute and beyond all manifestation. That is the great wonderment, that the all that is all there is, and yet remains one. And it is to the awakening of that that each of us comes in our own way and timing. We are all in stages of that realization. So contemplate your infinite existence. and your ongoing divine co-workership, co-creatorship with that one creative intelligence that we call Source. Have you ever given any deep contemplation to this? Put yourself out there in the midst of endless worlds, which even in the third dimension, you cannot count the trillions of galaxies and life forms inhabiting every single world. Every sun has life forms. Every moon, every planet, every dimension, the interior of every planet, in every ocean, throughout the atmosphere, throughout every kingdom of nature, and all the elements are teeming life forms, expressing consciousness at a particular level of manifestation. There is no object anywhere that is inanimate, that is to say, devoid of some form of sentiency. Even a rock has the ability to experience joy and sorrow. Everything is teeming with life. God is in everything we see. God is light, and light is the truth of every single manifestation. What is light? Divine intelligence, the nature of which is perfect creation. Only when it becomes mixed with mind, ego mind, does it assume a less than perfect manifestation temporarily in time and space. That is why we have what is called the appearance of death or dissolution, or entropy and centropy. Entropy meaning the collapse of the electrifying principle. Centropy meaning the electrification of the vital spirit. So we have this centropy and entropy only in the worlds of imperfect manifestation that have been mixed, divine perfect mind, with the ego mind of, well, on this planet, man. And the ego mind is simply a misidentifying of the self with falsehood, with imperfection, and with chaos. But beyond the ego mind is the illumined mind that remains eternally one and united with the divine mind. And that is the mind that we are constantly creating in the infinitude of the omniverses without end. There are God realms that manifest absolutely perfect creation, and then there are the realms of temporality, where we have temporal episodes couched between the appearance of birth and the appearance of dissolution or death that tell you you're living in an imperfect world that has only a tiny span in which it can manifest. That's why it's called the realm of impermanence. Only that which God created in absolute eternal perfection has eternal immortality of existence. Everything else is a passing appearance. And so that's why we're taught to have detachment and not to be attached to the things in the impermanent realm, because to become attached means to suffer. Know that what is yours eternally, because it's been birthed from God, as part of God, and can never be separated from that God essence. So again, take a deep breath and ask for the illumination of your understanding to the highest degree that you can contain at this time. Absorb, assimilate, digest, and make use of. Everything we teach is to be utilized. We're not speaking out of theory. We're not speaking out of imagination. We are speaking of the eternal verities that would make of your life a living paradise if they were realized through application. So there's a sense of separation and loneliness that seems to prevail for everyone who has yet to awaken to their divine essence and its omnipresence and connection with all life. In fact, that very sense of separation and loneliness is the predominant characteristic of one that is identifying with a false self or ego. And every form of fear, paranoia, criminal assault, and addictive behavior has this false sense of separation as its root cause. That is the root cause. That's it. And every state of consciousness produces an entirely different sense of reality and world of experience. That's why so many people have so many different ideas about what life is about, what's going on in the world, and what's going on in any given situation. They will see only from the lens of their particular level of consciousness. And, you know, you can observe what state of consciousness a person is relating from by the areas in which they focus their attention and the topics of conversation. So you might want to pay attention and practice the objective observer and listen in to your own conversation. And pay attention to what you're focusing in your areas of preoccupation. Every thought creates form at some level. You see, you're already exercising your nature as a divine created spirit. It's just that when it is tainted with the ego mind, it creates what's called karma. You create things that you then have to come back at some time, now or later, to rectify and set aright. So how important it is to exercise monitoring control over what you lend your energy to. So this sense of isolation and alienation and aloneness and loneliness is entirely a false state projected by the ego mind. Yet every unhappy, fearful, worrisome state of consciousness comes only from the ego. And this is both false and entirely unnecessary. We're all extremely ancient beings. And it's only because we have lacked the intensity of intention to monitor ourselves and direct ourselves from the conscious self rather than allowing the unconscious habitual patterning of the old conditioning to drive us. It's when we stop and take conscious control in directing our mind in line with where we say we want to go. We say we want to live in a world of peace. Well, the only way we can enter a world of peace is by entering it through the sacred heart and the sacred arch. So it's taught in the ancient wisdom teachings that to understand the heart, which is really what we're coming to, We must first contemplate infinity and what constitutes this eternal life. And you can think about it this way. Your material embodiment right now is like a little blip that barely shows up in the continuity of your eternal flow of existence. At the same time, you are existing at every level, every plane, every dimension, and holographically in the all that is replicated down into the smallest little quark of existence. You're in the macrocosm and the microcosm at all times, with a focus point in this little tiny blip of time-space, couched between a birth and a death, in a material universe governed by duality. But that's not really where you exist, because in highest truth, you've never left the heart of God, speaking of you in your bigger, vaster, atomic self. So first, we must speak of infinity. And then, we must speak of the sacred arc that connects everything throughout cosmos. And that is called hierarchy. And generally, I refer to it as your upline, because nothing seems to push the ego's button more and evoke its rebelliousness at the sense that it is actually not the highest or the brightest or the best on the totem pole, but in fact is subject to states of consciousness that far transcend anything that could even be imagined at the human state. So, the second principle after infinity is that we speak of the sacred arc, which is the literal translation of the word hierarchy, which is our eternal connection to immortal love throughout time, space, and beyond into infinity. So it's the infinite way that Joel Goldsmith called it, and the way, as Jesus referred to it, or the Shariat Kisugmad, which is simply the way of the eternal. And after we have discourse about infinity and the hierarchy, then only can we discourse about the heart. And since we've spoken of all three of these principles, and they are principles with a capital P, throughout 7 years of weekly seminars, we'd like to go deeper in this seminar, much deeper. And let's see where to begin with this. Well, first of all, the thing to be done sincerely in every one of our lives is to begin to really question the validity of every state except one of absolute divine joy. I want to say bliss, but that has kind of a namby-pamby meaning in English. I could say ananda. Begin to question every unhappy state. Let's put it that way. Test the validity of these states against the truth that you remain as God created you. You remain unmarred by your passage through time and space, ever whole, ever perfect, ever pure, completely untouched in your atomic self by anything that you've done in the lower worlds. Now, granted, when you're identified as a self operating in the lower worlds, you get the karma, you see? It's only in soul transcendence or transcending in consciousness above the sense of doership in these lower worlds that you can operate from a state of grace or a state of enlightenment. So begin to question these unhappy states whenever they arise, and consciously make the effort to reconnect to your spiritual reality. The spiritual reality is that every atom and molecule in existence is connected and part of this one Atma, this one God source. The Atma, or divine creative intelligence, is the source and substance of every level of all life and every state of awareness. So awakening as that Atmic Self and creative source is the sole objective of human incarnation. That's the one goal that all sentient life is progressing toward. And every individual upon Earth and within the creation of the infinite omniverses is manifesting some state of consciousness along the way to that merger and realization of total unity and oneness. That's the state that we refer to as being or sat or satyam. So life in terms of consciousness is multidimensional and found throughout all of creation upon infinite universes. And there's no end to creation and no end to awareness and no end to you. That unique God essence, that is you. And each individual embodiment allows for you as soul to exercise a certain area of untapped potentiality. Each life offers like an explorative adventure where one can reappear and reinvent oneself, if you will, as a different race within a different culture, embracing a different religious perspective, and occupying a period of time, and thus to sample life from a different perspective. In this, all souls are equal, in that they're all equally pure, divine, noble, and perfect. There is none that is greater or lesser. Only the outer personality differs. The ego mind differs. The universal mind is one and shared. Consciousness, differentiated by the personal ego, appears different until we transcend it into that higher mind, or the buddhi that we call it, or the divine creative intelligence. But inwardly, all souls are one, and all life is connected by a sacred arc linking every heart throughout the cosmos to the great heart, often called the cosmic magnet. That great heart is the giver, the creator, the bestower of all life. It is the supreme absolute, the it of itself, or sugmad. And out, this is what's so beautiful, out of the heart of the supreme creator, the source, all life emanated. Everything was created out of the heart of God. Every soul, everything that was created was birthed into eternal life from the heart of God. I'm speaking of the spirit here, not the forms. The material forms evolved through the elementals. The spirit was birthed out of the heart of God. That's where you have the perfect merger and understanding of evolution and creation. So the awareness of this eternal source and the connection that we have through the heart is actually embedded as a deepest, deepest knowing in every single heart. And this is why every wisdom tradition speaks of the importance of opening the heart and living a life of loving compassion. It is only when the heart is awakened and open, that the love that it is, the very love that is the sustaining, enlivening energy of all life, it's only when that's awakened that you'll actually experience that heart connection with all life. So let's pause a moment and take a deep breath and ride that energy down into the center of your heart. And ask to feel, experience that solid sense of connection of your heart with the heart of all the masters, the radiant light beings, all that exists that is connected and realized and conscious. Feel your connection to your own upline, your own master, your own lineage, the ashram that you represent here in time and space. Feel connected to your physical teachers. Feel connected to those loved ones that are in the spirit realm. Feel your connection with the planet. And realize the planet as well has a heart in the very center. Sometimes we call that heart the great central sun, or the inner sun of the inner earth. As I've told you many times, when you align with that sun, that heart, which is like a radiant sun, and you enter in through the soul gate into the kingdom of heaven, to that sacred opening into the heart mind of God, you find that you are aligned with the great central suns that begin to form a corridor of golden light. They all align as one. I noticed in one of the Alice Bailey books, I think it was Treatise on Cosmic Fire, that the Master DK had given a drawing of the planet Earth and its energy system, which looks and functions exactly like a heart. At the very way that the energy flows in and around and through the Earth, replicates the blood flow in the human heart. And the whole of cosmos is patterned after the sacred principle, capital P, of the heart, capital H. These are sacred principles that transcend the understanding of the heart simply being a physical organ. We're talking about something that has neither beginning nor end, nor birth nor death, and transcends the material. But the material manifestation is like the shadow cast into time and space of the reality. And so that is important as well. So a pure heart is the goal and objective of every spiritual discipline and approach and practice. It's the very greatest treasure, the greatest accomplishment, and the greatest power we could possibly attain. For a pure heart sees God. But Jesus taught in the Beatitudes, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. But how does one see God, which is formless light itself? Well, we see God only by reflection in one another. A God-realized person sees only the divine in all people and forms. And that comes only from a fully opened, pure heart. So the heart we're speaking of, again, is more than just that physical organ. But the organ is the material symbol of that great heart, which is a formless cosmic principle manifested in time and space through the form that we call the sacred arc or hierarchy, which is the principle, the group principle embodying the heart of God. But you know, even the physical heart is most remarkable. For example, in fetal development, the heart is the first, is the very first thing to develop and starts beating. And then the rest of the baby's body forms around the heart. Just like I said, that all of creation is birthed out of the heart of God. So, around the heart, creation takes its form. Around the hierarchy, creation is divinely ordered and governed. And, interestingly enough, the very first organ to develop out of that heart and to emerge from that heart is the tongue. Now, here is the secret of your human incarnation. To man alone is given the dharma of speaking God's heart and love into creation. Wow. So think of your heart and your speech as something with the greatest divine calling and potential, and as something of the greatest sanctity. The scriptures teach us also that out of what we have deposited into our heart, our tongue will speak. So you can tell a person's nature by what they give utterance to, because it comes out of the deposits that one has made into the consciousness, which in the highest sense is another manifestation of the heart or the awareness. So that's how you can discern a divinely awakened and realized person from one still sleeping in ego's ignorance. You can tell by their speech. A pure-hearted person gives utterance to uplifting, loving, positive, encouraging, pure, and divine speech. You know, you never hear an enlightened person denigrate or put down another. You don't hear them complain or condemn or judge. You just don't. They can't even give utterance to such things. You'll never hear them gossiping or slandering or speaking ill of anyone at all. So a useful exercise is to be the witnessing observer. Try listening in on your own conversations on the phone or with others. Are your words arising from the purity of your heart? Or are they coming from the ego mind? That's why it's important to just speak sincerely from your heart. So just observe and listen and note where you seem to be speaking from. And course correct when you sense ego shallowness and insincerity. In the ancient wisdom teachings, it is taught that the heart and tongue must lose all tendency to inflict harm and injury upon another before one is entrusted with genuine power and creative ability. That's why people are so ineffectual in creating really what they want in their lives, because they haven't lost that tendency and that evil intention to consciously hurt and harm and inflict upon others. So observe your heart, listen to your tongue, and be rigidly strict in curtailing any temptations to inflict harm upon another, whether in thought, word, or action. This is of the utmost importance. be careful what you post and what you tweet and what you lend agreement to. Walk away from people who are trash talking or castigating and denigrating and speaking ill of others. You don't need company with that. Keep your own counsel. So the sacred arc connects all hearts. It arches over infinite realms of creation, uniting all hearts, all worlds, all universes. The sacred arc is the actual meaning of the word hierarchy. And without an understanding of the true meaning of the word hierarchy, there can be no comprehension of our eternal connection with God and with each other and with all life. You know, there's been a tendency in religion to portray the picture of only three divine beings, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and or Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, or Isis, Osiris, and Horus. You know, every single religion that you look at, you'll find the triplicity. What they don't tell you is that that is one of millions and millions of trinitized consciousnesses that step down the divine ordinances of the Most High into time and space, that direct the evolution of countless worlds. They're thresholds of consciousness, if you will. And they're not meant to be taken as all that is. Everyone could be considered a group. There is a group of the Father principle called the Elohim. In the original Hebrew, it was translated as "in the beginning God created," but in the original Hebrew it was "in the beginning God created gods," or Elohim. These are the creative spirits that create under the, let's say, the overarching directive of the all that is, or the Sigmod. And so you have an understanding that the Elohim are a plurality of many, many created beings that create worlds. In fact, it said that in the Hebrew alphabet, 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, every single letter in that alphabet represents a creator God in his universe. And we're talking very big things here, very, very vast understandings. So we must broaden our understanding of what constitutes, quote, God. God is not an old man sitting on a throne up in the sky somewhere. God is an immortal, invisible, omnipresent, creative intelligence. I mean, you can't even describe what God is. It's beyond description. But it certainly isn't an anthropomorphic guy sitting up there. That is the all that is. I mean, there is the all that is as the all that is that dwells within you as the all that you are. So today, people misuse the word hierarchy, rebelling at the thought of an upline of authority. An ego's rebellious nature is quick to surface at the very mention of hierarchy. And with that ego reaction goes a disdain for the concept of the teacher, the master, or the spiritual preceptor or guru. And yet, among the wisdom teachings of the East, one finds many, many, many who tremble in joyous anticipation of encountering their teacher, one's spiritual master, and one's lineage. And this connection comes only by way of connecting initially with the heart and the collective of purified hearts that we call the spiritual hierarchy. Now, it's a wonderful thing to find your teacher. Actually, your teacher finds you when you're ready. You know, like it says, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that was certainly true in my case. So the principle that we call the heart of God is really this sacred ark. The hierarchy is comprised of all men and women who have awakened to their divine, true self and have purified their hearts and minds. And these members of the hierarchy live for one purpose, and that is service to all life in this and a myriad of worlds and universes. You can tell an awakening spirit because they are motivated with the desire to serve. And that service, again, is part of your immortal nature. You're always going to be laboring for the common good of all. Now, universal benefaction is the service. And you go from doing things physically to having so much of a tremendous spiritual attainment and containment within your chalice that you actually can foster and nurture entire worlds with your auric field and your divine thought. Yes. Entire worlds can be nourished by such a blazing sun of realization. So these divinely realized Christed men and women are the individuals that comprise the planetary and celestial hierarchies. There are many, 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 many. Every world, every planet, every dimension has its sponsoring, fostering, guiding upline. And they're all spiritually awakening souls because, again, enlightenment itself is eternal, ever-unfolding, and ever-expanding. So every single human being is connected to a particular master upon the inner planes and within the spiritual hierarchy before they are on a conscious path of discipleship and initiation. Usually the guidance comes from one of the disciples of that master in that ashram. That may take the form that looks like an angel or an inner plane guide or in some way fosters from behind the scenes each individual until they're ready to step consciously into the path to be trained as servers. And in turn, these great guides and mentors guide each soul to a particular spiritual path that is the best one for them at that time, in that lifetime. Or sometimes you'll adopt several paths in any given lifetime. It just depends on what your path is. You'll be guided to a path and a way shower and a mentor on the physical plane. You have to have a physical plane master. It's very important, according to the tradition that I've been initiated in, which is the way of light, divine light and sound, the divine light and sound currents. You have to be initiated by a spiritual traveler. And different paths have different approaches, but I think all of them agree that the inner plane master will invariably place you under the guidance and authority of a physical plane teacher. They don't have to be a master, but they at least need to be more developed than you are. So everyone who is awakening is under the supervision of what I like to call your upline. And again, these are the angels, spirit guides, friends, and others in spirit, teachers and masters of varying degrees of spiritual realization and attainment. So there is not a one-size-fits-all. There is not an ultimate, ultimate, ultimate truth that you can find in the outer world, because the truth, the real truth, underlined with capital T, can only be realized from within. So even the best and the highest of the teachings that you find in the outer world take you about as high as the upper mental plane, and there they stop. And there you have to go directly, inwardly, to connect and to progress in soul awareness. And soul awareness is what I strive to teach from and to guide you towards, so that you can be self-illumining and you can walk in the light of your own level of realization and live an authentic life that is consistent with your heart. Heartless actions are actions that waste time and energy. If you can't do it with all your heart, with love in your heart, with gratitude in your heart, for heaven's sakes, don't create more karma, but stop. And either correct your attitude and your altitude of your attitude, or do something else. Don't do heartless, deceitful actions that betray your innermost feelings. Try to bring those feelings under the governance of your soul. Try to monitor your ego so it doesn't lead you down those pathways that create for you more bondage. So I'd like to share with you a passage from the book Heart. It's from the teachings of Agni Yoga, Yoga of Fire. It's for the next root race on this planet. This particular passage was transmitted by the Master M, or the Mahatma Maurya, and it was given through telethought transmission to Helena Rorick, who I would call my spiritual mother. And you often wonder, what are we going into as a human species? And so the Master is letting you know how, as we move through this transformation of consciousness and this shift into a higher integration between the physical plane and the next subplanes of the etheric or astral realms, that you're going to have new abilities that are going to be more and more evident. Now, he calls this new level that we're moving into the subtle world. And this is what he has to say about it. The new subtle world may seem inconceivable to those who have not paid attention to so-called phenomena verified by photography, x-rays, and the testimonies of witnesses. Let us recall. Someone acted to cosmic manifestations. Someone heard far-off voices. Someone, envisioning it, participated in the subtle world. Someone became luminous. Someone levitated. Someone walked upon the water. Someone walked through fire. Someone swallowed poison without harm. Someone had no need of sleep. Someone had no need of food. Someone could see through solid bodies. Someone could write with both hands. Someone could attract animals. Someone could understand a language without knowing it. Someone could read thoughts. Someone could read with closed eyes, a closed book. Someone did not feel pain. Someone in the snow generated the heat of the heart. Someone did not feel fatigue. Someone could help by healing. Someone could manifest knowledge of the future. Thus, one can enumerate all manifested phenomena and a multitude of instructive examples from life. But for an instant, gather all these qualities into one body, and there you will have the new human transmutation that has been indicated in many teachings. The principal thing in this is transmutation. And this transmutation is that all its parts are already manifested, even in the midst of an imperfect existence. This means with definite striving, humanity can be strongly impelled to the transmutation of all life. Therefore, let us remember about the great fire of the heart, and about the fiery stronghold, the heart. For it is not a fairy tale, but a house of spirit. People desire evidence, but there are many proofs before them, which means that first of all, one must remember these and understand the power of thought and the fire of the heart. Think. The power of thought indicates to man the significance of culture. So, let me mention a few of these things because it's the teachings of the masters go into how the heart, the fire of the heart, is what makes all of these manifestations possible, along with the connection to the spiritual hierarchy. So when a person has a purified heart that is literally aflame with divine glory and is strongly connected with love and devotion and consecrated to the spiritual hierarchy, these manifestations are part of that next level of evolution. For example, one can walk upon water by nullifying and coming into a place of neutrality between the flow of gravitation, the pull of gravitation, and bringing all the pranas to a point of tension in the place, in the light body, behind the shoulder blades, which is strongly connected with the lung centers and the heart. This is what I learned from the masters. I often, myself, see through people. They become luminous, they become radiant with pure light, and sometimes I can see right through their bodies. And that has to do with my eyesight, which has been, again, transmuted to the fire of my heart. Levitation, again, occurs with the neutralization of the downward pull of the gravitational field of the Earth. When a person has transmuted and brought all of their pranas, their vital airs, up into the higher chakras and stabilized and balanced them in complete heart-mind coherency. You saw some of this with the flying yogis, with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. He taught some of his advanced disciples to levitate and to be able to transport themselves for short distances in certain states of meditation. And then when you can walk through fire without being burned, it's because the fire of your aura is of the same vibration and intensity and frequency as the fire that you're walking through. So the fire and you literally become one. Those that swallow poison without harm do so because of the purity of their heart, which immediately can transmute the harmfulness of the poison. Eventually, we will overcome the need to both sleep and eat because we will be able to take our nutrition directly from the vital vitality of the prana, the atmosphere, and we won't fall under the mode of ignorance or tamas and need sleep. So those are two things also that will be transcended as we move into this higher vibration. I have a friend who's an ascended, resurrected, ascended master, And she doesn't need to eat, but she eats because it's fun. And the food just turns into light as soon as she eats it. That was her explanation anyway when I was living with her, and she told me. And people can write with both hands. It said the Master Moria can write with both hands in different languages at the same time, carry on a conversation, and be out of body working, doing all of that at the same time. We've heard of yogis and saints that are completely harmed, unharmed by poisonous snakes and animals that normally would attack and devour a person. But because of the power of their aura and their harmlessness, they don't attract harm. I find often that I can understand a language even though I haven't learned it. And I was told that that is a quality of the heart. I noticed Sai Baba could speak any language whatsoever, as if he was a native, including very, very rare dialects that no one but a handful of scholars knew. That's a quality of the heart. Of course, many of us can read thoughts. I'm very telepathic. In fact, I sometimes don't realize people aren't speaking to me physically because I pick up on their thoughts. We have many of the special children that can read with closed eyes. And of course, when you practice Tummo, you can take a wet, cold sheet out in the midst of the snows of the highest Himalayas and dry it with the flame of your heart. When you're operating from the flame of the heart, you're like Sai Baba. You don't feel fatigue. So those are just a few of the examples of how these fiery transmutations will be operating in our new manifestation as we purify our hearts and minds and transmute and bring everything into divine coherency and radiance. Let's go out and chant Anahi and send it forth for the upliftment and peace of all beings throughout all the universes and worlds, and especially planet Earth. Deep breath. Baruch Hashem, Adonai.